I'm Louise. I've taught in the UK, Europe and Asia and have always been fascinated and mystified by language. To me, language is such an important part of teaching and learning that I felt it was worth creating this series. Over the next few weeks, I'll share some of my insights plus a bit of theory. We'll explore what it really means to teach children who are learning in an environment where the language of instruction is different to their home language. Whether you're a student teacher, a teacher new to the UK, or a teacher somewhere else in the world who is keen to brush up or find new ideas around teaching bilingual and multilingual students, I hope you'll find this series useful. Please let me know if you want me to add anything or go into more depth for any of the ideas I cover. This is the first episode of a series. My focus will be on teaching contexts I've been in, but what I'm going to talk about is likely to apply wherever you are. Just feel free to ask any of my questions or test any of my observations in your own context. They might provide a platform for investigation for you. I hope to arouse your curiosity. I want to start by asking a simple question. How many bilingual and multilingual learners are there actually in the schools where you teach? Let me give you some numbers that might surprise you. According to the Department for Education statistics from 2024, there are over 1.7 million pupils in English schools who speak English as an additional language. That's 21% of the school population, more than one in every five children. In the United States, about 10% of students, 5 million children, are classified as English language learners, students who are still developing English proficiency. In states like California and Texas, that jumps to nearly 20%. These are students formally identified as needing English language support. But remember, the total number of bilingual and multilingual students is far higher. Many children speak other languages at home, but are already proficient in English. Some may need support as they navigate school curricula, but some won't. And it's not just English-speaking countries. When I taught in Hong Kong, many of my students were first language Cantonese, Korean, or other languages. But their language of instruction was English. Think about what this means. If you're teaching in a major city anywhere in the world, at some point in your career, you will have multilingual learners in your classroom. Maybe 6 or 7 out of 30 students, sometimes more. I trained to teach in Bradford many moons ago, and in one of my teaching practice schools, the students were 99% native English speakers, while in another, they were 99% L1 Urdu speakers. So in some contexts, multilingual learners aren't a small minority. They're the mainstream. And here's a really important point. Even if you're teaching in a predominantly monolingual area now, this can change. I worked in Poland not long after the end of the Soviet Union, in a small town where my son and I were probably the only foreigners. My son attended a normal Polish primary school, and his teachers had to find ways to work around his lack of Polish. And recently, Poland has taken in a considerable number of Ukrainian refugees since the start of the war there. Schools are having to work out ways to support these sudden new arrivals. You will teach bilingual and multilingual children at some point in your career, so understanding bilingualism isn't specialist knowledge that only a few teachers need. It's a core teaching practice that every teacher should have. The question isn't whether you'll teach multilingual learners, the question is how well will you teach them? That's what this podcast series is all about. If you've read my blog, you'll know that I haven't always done a great job at teaching all my bilingual learners. It's a learning curve and takes time. But the more knowledge we have, the more options we have. Whether you're training to teach, you're a new teacher, or you're a teacher with a few years of experience, there's always something new to learn. Before I go, I want to go over some terminology you may or may not have come across to make sure we're on the same page when we discuss learners with additional languages. I'm just going to go down a list of terms which I'll be using throughout the series. These apply in the UK. They may be different in your context, but the concepts will be the same. Let's start with the big one, EAL. EAL stands for English as an Additional Language. This is the term used in the UK, and it refers to learners whose first language is not English. Children who are learning English alongside or after their home language. Why additional and not second language? Because many children are learning English as their second, third, or even fourth language. They may speak Punjabi at home, learn some Urdu at community school, maybe some Arabic from religious education, and are now learning English in primary school. That's not a second language. It's an additional language. The word additional also emphasises something important. We're adding English to these learners' linguistic repertoire, not replacing their other languages. Remember that, it'll be important later. Next term, bilingual and multilingual. Bilingual simply means using two languages in daily life. Multilingual means using three or more languages. You'll often hear bilingual used to cover both. And here's something important. Being bilingual doesn't necessarily mean perfect, balanced fluency in both languages. You don't have to be equally fluent in both languages to be bilingual. You just need to use both languages regularly in your life. A child might be more fluent in one language than the other. Maybe they're more comfortable in their home language than in English, or vice versa. And that's completely normal. They're still bilingual. Now, two really important abbreviations you'll see everywhere, L1 and L2. L1 stands for first language. You'll see this called mother tongue or home languages. This is the language learned first, usually from birth or early childhood. My L1 is English. That's the language I spoke and heard growing up at home. L2 stands for second language or additional language. This is any language learned after the first language is established. So for most EAL learners in UK schools, English is an L2. Now, here's why terminology matters. Listen to the difference between these two phrases. This child is learning English as a second language versus this child is learning English as an additional language. Do you hear the difference? Second language is neutral. It's just counting first language, second language. But additional language emphasises that we're adding to what students already have. We're adding to their linguistic resources. We're not replacing anything and we're not asking children to give up their first language. This connects to something we'll explore in a future episode, the difference between additive bilingualism, where English is added to the first language, versus subtractive bilingualism, where English replaces the first language. Spoiler alert, we want additive, not subtractive, but more on that later. So let's recap the key terms. EAL, English as an additional language. Bilingual, using two languages. Multilingual, using three or more languages. L1, first language or home language. L2, second or additional language. These are the foundational terms you need. We'll add more terminology as we go, but these are your building blocks. In the next episode, we're going to explore a crucial concept. EAL learners are not a homogeneous group. There's enormous diversity within the EAL population, and understanding this diversity is essential for effective teaching. I'm Louise. Thanks for listening. See you next episode.